This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm pleased to have on the show with me Susan Douglas, the feminist scholar who writes a regular column for In These Times and who chairs the communications department over at the University of Michigan. She's the author of Where the Girls Are and The Mommy Myth, and now she's got a great new book out called Enlightened Sexism, The Seductive Message That Feminism's Work Is Done. Susan Douglas, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Well, it's great to have you on the show and to have an opportunity to talk to you about this book, which I've enjoyed going through a couple times now, usually at my usual ramp speed, but there you go. Why don't you define what you mean by enlightened sexism?
Well, enlightened sexism is a new, sneaky, subtle form of sexism that seems to accept, even embrace, feminism on the surface, but is really dedicated to the undoing of feminism and to keeping women, and especially young women, in their place. And so I call it enlightened sexism because, you know, it looks like there's an acceptance of feminism, but then that's used to give permission to resurrect a whole host of sexist images now that are coursing through the mainstream media and are especially directed at young women, our daughters.
You know, I was amazed at that part of the book. I mean, I didn't know there was something called toddlers and tiaras, but maybe that's just my own ignorance there. But there was a statistic you had in the book that more than 50% of girls in grades 3 to 5 say they worry about their appearances. I mean, that is an incredibly young age to start worrying about these imposed ideals of what a girl or woman should look like.
Well, you know, if you look at everything from the media that's around our kids to what's on offer in clothing stores, you know, and, you know, little baby T-shirts that say Daddy's Little Hottie and stuff like that. I mean, the sexualization of children, but especially young girls, has moved farther and farther down the age chain. And there have been two studies recently. One was done by the children's advocacy group, Girls, Inc., and that's where that statistic you cited came from. And they did this big study of kids in grades 3 through 12, and they found that these girls, and that young, you know, in third and fourth grade, are already getting this message that they have to worry about their appearance and being hot. And when you see that thongs are being sold, you know, to 6- and 7-year-olds, you know, you're not surprised. It's really one of the more disturbing aspects of this new kind of sexism that's out there.
And part of it is not even enlightened sexism. It's retro sexism, this idea that just women, the old idea that girls and women are plain old sex objects.
Exactly. You know, you do have this mix now of really in-your-face retrograde sexism. But what's different about it, Matt, what's interesting about it is that a lot of this is done with kind of a wink. And this is especially true of reality shows, which, as you know from the book, I think is, you know, the reality TV is kind of the ground zero of this kind of sexism. So when you're watching this hideous show, Toddlers and Tiaras, which I'm glad you've been spared, but it's this really creepy show that has little girls in diapers 2 and 3 years old competing in a beauty pageant. And, you know, we're not supposed to look at it completely straight. We're supposed to look at it feeling superior to those who are in the show, viewing it with a certain kind of irony. And because that ironic pose is used in so many of these shows, you know, the Real Housewives of whatever, so on and so forth, it gives a kind of cover. It gives a sort of excuse for resurrecting stereotypes of women as catfighting, obsessed with relationships, only, you know, really caring about shopping and backstabbing each other and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you have a kind of a critique of irony in this book, Susan Douglas. The book's Enlightened Sexism, The Seductive Message That Feminism's Work Is Done. And that critique is that we're fooling ourselves if we think that just by taking that ironic pose that sexism isn't getting through and may not even be getting through to you. I mean, it may even be getting to us, the viewer who is taking that pose and thinking we're superior, much less to others who aren't so sophisticated in the use of the irony.
Exactly. And, you know, this is especially geared to young people. You know, the generation today of kids who are, you know, 25 years old and younger, this is the most marketed to, sold to generation ever. And they, become hip to the various ploys used on them. And so, they don't want to feel like they've been sucked in by the mass media. You know, I mean, who does? But they, in particular, want to feel like they're above it. And so this use of irony, this wink, wink, you know, you can watch this retrograde stuff because we're really making fun of the people in the show, and you can feel superior to them, is quite an effective kind of shield for young people to watch something like Jersey Shore, feel like they're not getting sucked in by messages that are derogatory to different ethnic groups, certainly sexist, because it's all just kind of a joke. Well, it isn't a joke if you're trafficking in stereotypes that are either racist or, class biased or sexist.
And you, it's not just on the TV shows, though. You consume an enormous amount of TV. You're kind of like the champion hot dog eater. I don't know how you do it. How do you watch so much of this stuff?
Hello, DVD box sets, you know. But I don't know. This is my job. I teach about media studies, and one of the things that is very true in my line of work, especially my line of teaching, is I have to be watching what my students are watching. And if I'm not watching what they're watching, I can't speak to them about the kind of ideological work that the media do. And so, you know, some of it I can take in very, very tiny doses, like Jersey Shore or Toddlers and Tiaras, but they're watching these shows. And so some of this is flipping around the channels, and of course, I do have my own guilty pleasures of things that I do like on television because, I have a love-hate relationship with the media.
Well, I can't resist that. What is one of those guilty pleasures?
I love The Good Wife. I think it's a really interesting show. I don't know if you've been watching it, but it's based on basically the Elliot Spitzer scandal. But this time, the guy goes to jail, a guy played by Chris Noth. And so his formerly stay-at-home wife has to go back and practice law and wrestle with whether she wants her husband to get out of jail or not. And it's very interesting about a woman going back to work, having to refine her confidence and prove herself because she's been out of the workforce for so long. And it's very subtle. It's got real interesting stuff about how the kids are coping with it. So that is one of my guilty pleasures. I think it's a very good show.
I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at The Progressive Magazine. My guest today is Susan Douglas. She's the author, most recently, of this great new book called Enlightened Sexism, the seductive message that feminism's work is done. You're listening to Progressive Radio. What are your students watching? What shows are they watching these days?
They watch Gossip Girl. And again, Gossip Girl, which is a soap opera about very rich kids living on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. It's another show that it's just arch enough, it's just over the top enough that it can address kids, again, with this knowing, ironic smirk. Because it's so sort of arch in its self-knowledge and self-knowingness, it actually is better than it deserves to be, but they're totally into Gossip Girl. They are watching Jersey Shore. You know, these are students at a very good university who can watch Jersey Shore and make fun of those people and, you know, look down on them. Some of them do watch Toddlers and Tiaras in the same way you'd watch a train wreck. They still watch Grey's Anatomy. It's kind of a mix.
Talk to me about Grey's Anatomy, Susan Douglas, because you cited several times in this book Enlightened Sexism as a positive portrayal.
Well, it's a mixed bag, you know. I think, you know, with what the media giveth with one hand, they taketh away with the other. And, this is created by an African-American woman who wanted to have a multiracial, multi-ethnic caste, and utterly naturalize, racial integration at the very top levels of the professions, and she's done that. And she also wanted to create strong, ambitious women, and she's done that. And several of the characters in this show are just wonderful to watch because they are fearless. They save lives. It's, you know, this wonderful sort of role model media imagery that various of us were clamoring for back in the 70s and 80s. But, of course, they have to leaven it with various sexcapades and people jumping from bed to bed and so on and so forth. So, overall, I think the reason that young women in particular like this show is that it is very aspirational in showing women doing exactly what men can do, sometimes even better, but also struggling around issues of relationships and love in their lives as well.
You write in the book that part of Hollywood depictions, they're giving women and girls the fantasy of power. And you mentioned in your bit on Grey's Anatomy and Enlightened Sexism that there's one character, the black woman doctor, who tells off the senior physician and calls him arrogant and all sorts of names. And you have something in there where you wish you could tell some of your superiors that sometimes.
Right.
But is this what you mean by fantasies of power, or is there something more going on there?
Well, Matt, one of the reasons I wrote this book is that I started seeing a lot of stuff that was on offer for my daughter when she was a teenager. And, of course, being a baby boomer feminist, I was appalled at this stuff and would walk into the living room and, make derogatory comments about those shows, which, of course, she appreciated so much. But then I began thinking about what was on offer for me. And I began to get struck by the overrepresentation of female achievement in the shows I was watching, in the 9 and 10 o'clock strips. So we had all of these female judges, and one of the ways these shows would, do their, get out of jail card, free, is to have an African-American woman as a judge, as if black women have, conquered the heights of the criminal justice system in this country. But women were lawyers, law partners, chiefs of police, DAs, surgeons, so on and so forth. And so it was this fantasies of power laid before me that there's no need for a women's movement anymore. Feminism, we're done here. Look, women have cracked the glass ceiling in almost every profession. And so as I thought about my castigation of what my daughter was watching, I also had to think about what was on offer for me that was, in fact, a fantasy, because there is a huge gap between these high-achieving, professionally, successful women on television and how the vast majority of everyday women and girls live their lives, what they've got to, choose between, and so on and so forth.
And that's really the point, that these shows don't show that other half, or the vast majority, as it were, because having some positive representations of women in positions of authority or power certainly is good for role modeling, too. And if they weren't there, I suppose we'd all be criticizing them for not having many depictions like that. But there's so much that is not shown. That seems to me a really striking thing. I mean, you talked about Gossip Girl. You mentioned the OC and 90210. I mean, the class bias of so many of, or almost all of these shows on TV is almost as astonishing as the sexual bias.
Well, if you look at something like Laguna Beach or The Hills, which were these MTV reality TV shows geared primarily to young women, the level of conspicuous consumption in those shows made Beverly Hills 90210, which aired in the early 90s, look middle class. What happened in the late 1990s and since, until the Great Recession, was an incredible inflation of conspicuous consumption, spending, the images of vast mansions and all the rest. So you're absolutely right. It's not just that we were seeing, as we did in the 50s, primarily these sort of whitewashed middle class and even upper middle class depictions. These are depictions of the very wealthy. And, there's a great documentary out that some of us teach with called Class Dismissed, and it looks at the utter erasure of the working classes in the media today. And if you think about the late 80s and early 90s, it's not like there was a lot, but we had Roseanne, we had Grace Under Fire. There were television shows showing either single mothers or working class women trying to make it, that sort of mixed in with other kinds of depictions. And you're right, we celebrate role model images of women, but not when they are so prevalent and so magnified that they utterly erase how the majority of most women have to live their lives.
And what is the reason for that tilt in coverage? It has to do, I suppose, with, of course, marketing and hitting a demographic and trying to get people to buy the commercials that are on the show.
You know, it's such an interesting amalgam, Matt, because it is, of course, that. You know, to get people to buy things or think they need things that they can't quite afford, you want to show aspirational images, which is what they call it in the industry, so that people will, you know, push themselves to move up and buy a slightly more expensive car or more expensive skin cream or whatever. But that has intermixed with a much more, I think, noble desire on the part of certain show creators who really want to show role model women who are achieving what men can achieve. So it's this very contradictory brew that has produced what we have.
Another part of the book that I found interesting, Susan Douglas, the book is Enlightened Sexism, is your discussion of celebrity magazines, not just People, the old war horse, as you called it, but the more contemporary ones. And there's an arresting line in this book. You say of the actresses who are depicted, whether, you know, who wears it best or whatever the contest is that they're doing at that point when they take pictures of two actresses wearing the same dress. You say, when they are policed, we are all policed. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you are Jennifer Aniston, just to pick one of my students' favorite celebrities, beautiful, successful, all the rest, and if she is pitted against some other equally gorgeous, successful, accomplished actress about who wore a dress better, and one of them loses, we are all swept up in that policing because, you know, I can't compete with Jennifer Aniston. And so it's a way in which the surveillance of women's faces and their bodies, which is incessant in celebrity magazines, surveillance of their hair, their suntans, their mothering practices. Do they have a bulge in their belly, and does that mean they ate too much for lunch or they might be pregnant? I mean, the surveillance is incessant. And if celebrities like that can be put under such a microscope, then all the rest of us are too, because we're not them.
Staying with Jennifer Aniston a second, Susan Douglas, the media seems to make her into this poor, pitiful thing who can't find a man and therefore has an unfulfilled life. And this is the soap opera we've been watching for years now since Brad Pitt divorced her. How reductionist is that?
Well, it is, and even worse, this poor woman is hounded month in and month out about when she's going to have a baby, and the hypernatalism of celebrity culture is so toxic that it absolutely bombards any woman who has not had a baby with the message that she's worthless until she does. The celebration of one baby, oh, you've only had one, have two, adopt the Tibetan village, whatever, is so marginalizing of women who, for whatever reasons, and there are lots of good reasons that various women have to not have children, that's like a censored position. And so Jennifer Aniston, I think, is really the poster woman for this constant bombardment that if you don't have children, you're nothing, which is a message that feminists really tried to deep six in the 1970s.
I was going to say, this goes way back. This is really retro. This is 1950s. You're identified as a woman by how many kids you have. And so why has this made such a comeback? Why has feminism lost this one?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And I think one of the things that animates celebrity journalism, which has completely metastasized over the last 10 years, as you know, both in print and online, is to keep celebrities having a lot of fans, you want fans to, A, be curious about what's going to happen next to him or her, but they've also discovered that they want people to be able to identify with the celebrity. So I think, you know, there are many people who identify with Jennifer Aniston. Here's this beautiful woman who got ditched by her husband. And she's also played particular kinds of roles that make her accessible. And so it's this sort of identification, people being interested in somebody that gets to this, you know, they're just like us. And one of the hooks is having babies. I mean, you know, a lot of the readers of these magazines are women sort of between the ages of 18 and, you know, late 30s, early 40s. And what are they doing? They're having kids. So this is a way to make an identifying kind of connection between the woman reading the magazine and the celebrities in the magazine.
Susan Douglas is my guest today. Her book is Enlightened Sexism, The Seductive Message That Feminism's Work Is Done. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at The Progressive Magazine. You also, Susan, talk about something that I didn't realize was going on, which is this just dramatic increase of breast implants that women are having in this country. The plastic surgery, 10 times as many women are having breast implant surgery today as they did in 1992, according to your book. There are now 400,000 of these operations every year. That was astonishing to me. What is behind it?
Well, various things are behind it. Certainly there's been some promotion among a variety of plastic surgeons, and that industry has actually been quite divided around some of these issues. The other is that there was this explosion of makeover shows on television, from the original Extreme Makeover to The Swan to I Want a Famous Face. And in The Swan in particular, a woman's body was sort of projected onto the screen, and these plastic surgeons pointed out everything that was wrong with her, and then she would have multiple surgeries, and all of them were told that they had to have breast augmentation. So they began to get a naturalization of plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery on these reality TV shows. It's also been promoted much more aggressively in women's magazines like Vogue. And it's also moved down the age chain. So between the advertising among plastic surgeons themselves, makeover shows, and then my really favorite event, which was something that Clear Channel inaugurated called the Breast Christmas Ever, which was launched on in several major markets like St. Louis and Detroit, in which women and high school girls were supposed to send in pictures of themselves and say why they most deserved breast augmentation. And the one whose story was the most pathetic and who apparently was the most flat-chested won breast augmentation for Christmas. And again, this was all done with a wink and ha ha ha, but this is misting through our culture now, and it has affected behavior.
Well, I mean, why do you think people would enter a contest like that or go on some of these shows like The Swan? The element of self-degradation is just amazing to me.
Oh, you know, I don't know. I mean, for some people, the chance to be on television is very compelling. For with the very original Extreme Makeover, there were men and women, and some of them really did suffer from, you know, major features that were bothering them. You know, lost teeth, you know, problems with, you know, their, you know, parts of their faces that had been a result of injury, that sort of thing. But it quickly morphed. So people saw if you entered these shows, you could get free surgery. The whole message is you'd become more conventionally pretty. And so, you know, for some of these folks, and a lot of the folks in these shows are working class folks, lower middle class folks, and, you know, it's not like they have a lot of dignity in their lives sometimes anyway. And so here's an opportunity to be paid attention to by top plastic surgeons, get on TV, and the message over and over these makeover shows is if you change your body, you're going to change the inner you. You're going to get your self-esteem. You're going to get your confidence back. That is the repeated mantra. And so who doesn't want to feel better about themselves? And that's the message of these shows.
You say we should talk back to the TV toward the end of your book, Susan Douglas, the book Enlightened Sexism. How do we talk back to the TV?
Well, I'm going to say something that I know will seem somewhat inconsequential and maybe silly at first, but it is very important to literally talk back to the television set when there are young people in the room. Study after study has shown that young people learn that they can and should talk back to and resist media images if there's a grown-up they respect doing the very same thing in that room. And that has to do not only with sexism in the media, but also racism and violence, to point out the way in which violence, which is used to solve so many problems in the media, is actually often not a very good way to resolve these problems. So that's step number one. but I also think we need to become more activist in sending emails, letters, at comments back to news divisions and entertainment divisions when they are trafficking in sexist media, and also when they're doing good things, because there is a powerful agenda-setting function of the media. It's not that the media necessarily tell us what to think, although sometimes they do, but they certainly tell us what to think about and what is more important to think about than other things. And I think a lot of this media imagery right now, I mean, the main point of the book is that whether it's, you know, Gossip Girl or whether it's Grey's Anatomy, ironically, because female achievement has been so naturalized and overrepresented, the message that comes out loud and clear is that feminist politics is no longer necessary. And if you look at the statistics governing everyday women's lives today, feminist politics is absolutely necessary, and girls and women have to start advocating much more for ourselves.
The book is Enlightened Sexism. The author, Susan Douglas, my guest today. We have about only a minute left, Susan. And I wanted to just briefly bounce Sarah Palin off of you. She recently called herself a feminist and talked about mama grizzlies. In your book, you say she's anything but a feminist. How do you react to that? Is that a sign of progress?
Oh, I think it's a sign of opportunism. Mm. you know, this is a woman who benefited from all of the achievements of the women's movement, all of the legal, social, and cultural achievements that made it possible for a woman to be a governor of a state. And yet, if Sarah Palin were to get into office, she would, and has already demonstrated, that she would make a commitment to undoing everything that has made feminism possible. So you can call yourself a you know, a grizzly, or, you know, a tough hockey mom. That is not the same thing as being a feminist. I just think it's completely opportunistic. Now, there's a big debate about this. Is it, you know, only progressives and liberals can be feminists? I don't think so. But Sarah Palin's politics are not feminist politics.
Well, we're going to leave on that note. Susan Douglas, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
Susan's book, again, is Enlightened Sexism, The Seductive Message That Feminism's Work Is Done.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.